Hi, and welcome to the Indie Music Podcast, the podcast for independent musicians and other music professionals. We're your hosts, myself, Matt Denton, also known as Mojo, of Ragged Birds Music. I'm a recording artist and mix engineer. And Douglas Reynolds of Resonance Studio, a mastering and recording engineer.
Hey.
Hey.
I started recording before I let you in this time in case you sang again.
Oh, I recorded it. I caught it. I put enough of it on there so that we don't get sued. And
I didn't have it in my on my side for a like some sort of future thing.
Oh, blackmail? Yeah.
Yeah. I get it.
No, that was that situation where it was like I don't know, I'd quit Firefox, and then when I went to hit Zoom, it launched Firefox and then like spawned like 300 different windows, and I had to wait for it all. Anyway. How are you, Doug? How's my level? How's your level? How's everybody's level?
Yeah, level's good. Level's I actually good. Have my monitors working tonight. First time. I don't know what I did, but I can actually hear myself in my headset.
Well, that's good. And you were asking me about your microphone position after last time. Because you had changed it and then changed it back or something?
No, it's right where it was.
Oh, okay. Oh, speaking of microphones and interfaces, you know how I just bought a new PreSonus interface?
I saw that.
Like a second one?
Yeah.
They're only $99 now, and I think that's probably because they have a new line of them coming out. But I'm thinking for $99, you should just have one off as a spare, you know?
Yeah.
Especially since I have fried my original one today, attempting to do room calibration, and the first thing they tell you to do is calibrate your interface by making a loopback connection and running the software so it runs a test, and I think I burned out the preamp in my interface.
Oh man.
So now I'm down to one, so I'm glad I had a spare, and I'm thinking that maybe I'll buy two more so that in case something happens to one of them. I mean, $99, that's
I'm not sure. I don't think I've ever had to deal with that. I do my room correction in Room EQ Wizard.
Well, that's what I used.
Oh.
Yeah, but I was watching a video. I watched a couple of videos on how to use it, and one of the videos said, "Oh yeah, you got to make sure that your interface isn't coloring the input, you should calibrate it first."
Okay.
And a lot of the instructions are for, you know, PCs with sound cards and blah blah blah. This one actually had a picture of a PreSonus interface. It's an older one, so it wasn't quite the same, but I did the loopback thing. The test worked the first time around, and then it gave me a weird signal, and then I ran it a second time, and the clipping light went on, and then after that I got no signal through it.
Oh, weird.
Yeah, and it smells kind of burnt now, and I've taken it apart. It smells.
Well, time
smells
to learn like, how they work,
you know? Yeah, well, it's mostly a printed circuit board with some jacks soldered to it, so there's not really much to troubleshoot there.
Yeah, look for something burnt, figure out what the value of that resistor was, and
exactly
they're only like 4 cents a piece.
I know, yeah. we have a great electronics store down in Santa Fe. I think they're open, but I've been there 100 times. They go, you can get everything down there: diodes, resistors, transistors. I bought replacement capacitors for guitar upgrades and stuff like that down there. Yeah, it's a great spot.
I'll have to look at that because I'm sure I did that, but it got to be like 2 years ago and set up my interface. And then I just, now that I had it set up, when I pull up REW, it, everything's already set up and I just run the EQ Wizard stuff again.
Yeah. Maybe at some point we should hop on a walk through Zoom and you can show me what you did. It's not super intuitive software, which is why.
No, it is not.
I pulled up a couple of videos, which looked very helpful and instructive, but.
I got some good stuff bookmarked. I'll send you some links.
Cool. I did order online a flat response micro condenser, shotgun style microphone, especially for room calibration. It's a Behringer. Cool. It looks like the one that comes with the Soundworks,
Yeah, I've got a couple of those. One of them is the Behringer, but then I ended up getting actually, I take that back. One of them is from is the one from Mini DSP. Uh-huh. And I got another one, which is I use for my front of house stuff when I'm ringing out the rooms that we're getting ready to play in. I use. So anyway, as a result of that, I ended up with two of those things.
But that's cool. So you use one. You actually calibrate the room for front of house. That's
yeah.
That's cool. I don't know that a lot of guys do that.
Yeah, I do that. Plus, I set up it's a dynamic feedback suppressor, and so I basically, as part of that setup, I find out what the maximum volume I can get before feedback, and then do EQ adjustments and stuff like that.
Wow. Clever.
And doing that, getting the room rung out and finding trouble signals in the whole setup and sound check process, I get to find out where that max is. It ends up giving you about an extra, like up to 10 dB of extra headroom.
Nice.
Yeah. Feedback. That's bad.
Yeah, feedback is bad.
People look at you like with angry faces and stuff.
Oh yeah, especially the singer. The guitarists, yeah. they kind of like the feedback sometimes. Adam Jones kind of getting all up in the speaker.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. So that was another rabbit hole I went down. I'm excited though. I'm getting close to calling this room done. It sounds pretty good.
It sounds really good.
Yeah,
in fact,
the treatment in the front wall is pretty, it's pretty bitchin' looking. It's a combination of different things, and I'm excited on Friday after the DIY. Of course, this is going to be in the past by the time this airs, but I'm going to do a walkthrough on Instagram Live.
Oh, nice.
Kind of just walk around and say, here's why I made this choice. Here's what this is. And just kind of, because I have different materials up. And I had reasons for choosing them. Because, you know, there's a lot of information out there and, you know, you've got to make your choices, right? So,
right.
So I'm just going to talk about why I made the choices I did for the things that I put in this room and why I configured it this way and how it's a multi-purpose room, really. So kind of did the best we could, but I can still consider it a work in progress.
So I was going to say last time, the Zoom audio that I was getting from you had some bit of reverb in it. And I had mentioned, you know, like a little bit of your room echo.
Yeah.
And I had mentioned that in the podcast.
Right.
And then, but when I heard your recording, there was none of that in it whatsoever. So.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. So it was definitely like so much better. So there was just crappy Zoom is what I was hearing, you know, during our actual recording.
Well, when I run, I have a gate on in Logic, so it cuts some of that stuff right off.
Yeah.
That's mostly for the noise floor thing, not so much to take the room out of the recording, but it's more for noise floor.
But I'll tell you, tonight,
etc.
I don't hear that at all tonight. So tonight your vocals in my headset sound as good as they did after post-production.
Nice.
Last episode.
Well, that's good. Well, your vocal sounded so good last time. I literally didn't have to EQ them at all. Like I had the EQ because I have a track. It's the Doug vocals track, and it's got like a preset EQ on there from the, you know, just trial and error. Like I know what to pull out and stuff. And I listened to the bounce and I'm like, that doesn't sound right. I went back and took the EQ off and it sounded great. So
okay,
whatever cool. You did to your vocals last time was spot on.
Yeah. It was a combination of, getting my mic closer, which it is tonight too. So
yeah. Mine's a little closer than usual.
And then I actually ran a few things in my mastering chain on it when I was done.
Yeah. Yeah. But I noticed that, I don't know if you do compression on your vocals, like limiting or compression?
Oh, let me
leveling.
See what I got. Oh, yeah, I had some compression on there and just EQ and compression. That's it.
Okay. Because I find that when I listen to my vocals back, I can tell that I fade in and out. Like when I move my head around, it's a little less consistent. So I tend to run, I do vocal rider and I do compression.
I'm running into that DBX 286S vocal channel strip.
Yeah.
And I'm basically recording with compression and gate right now.
Okay.
So I run through it So my microphone goes directly to that, and that goes into my interface. And so what you're getting right now, I don't have any other effects on here other than a gate. Mm-hmm. And actually, I have two gates on it. But so I've got one digital gate and then one analog gate.
This is interesting to me. I wonder if this is interesting at all to anybody else.
Oh, I don't
know. Okay, so here's what I got. I got a trim plugin, which is my, you know, Satsen channel.
Have we ever really worried about that?
No, we never really have. No. You know, our three listeners are pretty loyal, I think. So I got Satsen, which is a trim plugin, basically with a VU meter. I got a gate, and then I got a de-esser, just lightly touching it. And then I'm running through NLS, which is kind of a summing thing just for, I don't know, console saturation kind of thing. And then on the main bus, I have, this is my secret vocal weapon. It's one of the, you know, the Waves One Knob series. Do you know that series?
Yeah.
It was a freebie years ago, and it's become it's been my secret sauce in all my vocals. It's the One Knob Louder. And it's some kind of, it's kind of LA-2A-ish. It's just kind of like this, you know, as you crank it, it does some kind of input versus output algorithm. But I just leave it on like the lowest setting. And it just does something to vocals to kind of, I won't even say compress it, but it just touches it. In fact, it's not really even doing anything right now. But on a vocal bus, that plugin, I always have it on. And I never touch it. And it doesn't always do anything that you can see, but I can tell when it's not there. It's that kind of a plugin.
Yeah, it just gives like whatever, you know, like it's, some plugins like just add some air or do something. It's a little, some, you know, or they may be taking something away.
I feel like it just kind of tightens things a little bit.
Yeah.
Just enough that you miss it when it's not there.
Yeah, just smoothing things out a little bit and stuff.
I feel that way about kombucha. Like you drink kombucha and you're like, this isn't doing anything for me. I don't understand what the fuss is about. And you drink it regularly and you're like, this is not doing a thing. And then you stop drinking and you're like, oh, I feel kind of crummy.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that.
I haven't had it in a while. I should get some now that you remind me.
Well, if you don't mind, buy it, my kid drinks it all. It's like, so my kids are kind of, they're funny roommates, really is what they are. They're not old enough to have been out of the house and live with other people and like have the real roommate experience where you kind of learn how to conduct yourself and not eat the other person's food and not, you know,
yeah,
that kind of thing. So like I came in here, so I have my youngest is the one that we kind of co-share this space. The other half is the study space. And, he knew I was coming into podcast, and he was going to go in the other room. That's, remember we did the trade off. We were going to do Thursdays instead of Wednesdays because he has a night class. And anyway, I come in here. He's got all the windows shut. It's like stuffy as heck. And I'm like, come on, man. Think about the next person who's going to come into the room. Anyway, that's a little gripe. It's like you gotta teach people how to think about other people kind of sometimes. Anyway,
sure. Well, make your kids go get a restaurant job.
Yeah. Right.
And then the first time that they come in the morning and open up and the night shift, like left all the crap for them. You know?
Yeah, totally. They've done catering jobs. They occasionally do part-time catering. And they're really good at serving, like serving meals. Like, yeah, they know how to fold napkins now. So you get an interesting education, no matter what your job is, you learn a little something that you can apply somewhere else. Anyway, all that aside, so you are working on a reconfiguration of your own studio. How's that going?
Oh, it's going. It's still just planning. I did move the drum kit out. It's no longer in the studio. And I am been shopping on for a table. And it's sort of going to be, other than my desk, it's going to, everything's sort of going to build out from this table.
Oh, a table, not your desk that you sit at.
No, not my desk, but this is a table where the amplifiers are going to sit, and it's also going to have some decoration and stuff like that. But yeah, it's going to be where all the power is.
So, okay.
And so I want to get it set up because it's sort of going to determine how other things lay out in here. And I don't know. I got taken a good, we've got an older TV. It's probably, oh gosh, got it in 2010, I think. And it's still a great TV. And so we just replaced it. I'm turning that into a second display. It's a 40.
Yeah, you're metering on one display.
Yeah, so it's a 46 inch TV, and I think that's going to be really cool to have great big metering on a display.
Yeah, I like that idea.
Which would be cool. So you know, I got stuff like that. It's not even related to audio. It's just setup, you know. And
well,
you know,
it's
and
related I'm thinking to the
about,
space.
Thinking about my rack, and I don't know. There's just all kinds of stuff to sort of sort out here. And plus, it's a process of there's things that I definitely need to purchase in order to do what I want to do. So that's right. Also a kind of a big planning thing.
And I imagine you have that prioritized by what do I need first to solve this problem? What do I need next kind of thing?
Yeah. And so thinking about, you know, the components I need for the audio system and stuff like that, because we're going to add an actual large set of floor standing speakers for kind of setting this up, right? So, and those are really the first part of the system, I believe. I believe any audio system should start with the speakers and build from there. And even so much as choosing what amplifier that you want to get, you know, so if you know in advance what speakers that you plan to mm-hmm. use, obviously with your regular standard studio monitors, you know, dynamic, they're powered and you don't really have to those type of considerations, you know, with most near field studio monitors. You do some like NS10s and stuff like that, but so you don't really have to worry about that because that's a well-performing amplifier with the speakers already been engineered into those that monitors that you've bought, you know, so you don't have, well, it's not the case, you know, when you're buying equipment and you want to have an amplifier that matches what you're trying to do and speak, you know, and the speakers that are going to produce sound, you know, I want speakers that are like hi-fi speakers that are like audiophile speakers, but I don't want any color in them at all. And so shopping on what speakers and frequency responses and things like that, and sensitivity. I learned a lot. It's really kind of cool. You know, if you take a look at the like a sensitivity of a speaker kind of determines how much power you actually need in order to drive it.
That's an interesting point, yeah.
Yeah, you know, so if you have a 90% sensitivity setting on your speaker, then you can actually calculate at 2 meters, how much wattage do I need in order to drive this thing to 85 dB? You know, and so actually thinking about that kind of thing, you know, and so the speakers I'm looking at are a little, not quite as sensitive as that. They're like 88 or something like that. And I need like 45 watts of power to drive them at 85 dB at like 2 meters, something like that. And so that says, okay, cool. So I need at least a 90 watt amplifier. All right. Okay. And that's with no headroom. And I probably sometimes want to listen to it louder than that, you know?
Yeah.
And then every dB is kind of exponential. So, I mean, that's actually
it's a logarithmic scale, right?
Yeah. And so you need a lot more power for every dB. So if you want to get up to 90, you know, I don't have these calculations in my head, but
really sounds like you do.
you might need another like 20 watts to get up there. And it's only 5 dB more or something like that. So that scale. So I determined that I need like a 300 watt amplifier,
oof,
which is split into two channels. So 150 watts per side in order to give me the headroom that I want to get. Cause I want to drive the amp in the sweet spot, but not overdrive it or underdrive it. So, you know, that's kind of where I'm at.
Right. But, you know, the sweet spot is something that, you know, guitarists know, but I don't know if a lot of other people spend a lot of time thinking about it. It's kind of like that, you know, you don't want to be all the way at the top and you don't want to be at the bottom. There's like somewhere kind of just past the middle. And I think this is true of a lot of electronics, like where something is really running at its optimal usage.
Yeah. Now, a lot of what I found is they call this linearity. Mm-hmm. And these linear amplifiers have a very consistent output across their range of power. And so what you get at a low level is the same quality as what you get at a high level. And you pay for that, okay? So
I imagine.
But they've done I mean, it's really pretty incredible. I know I'm kind of geeking out on this, but it's been my area of research lately.
I don't mind, geek away, man.
But it's been kind of cool learning this stuff. I, you know, I'm not an audiophile, and I guess I'm kind of entering a wannabe area here because it's kind of cool. I'm into like restoring my own turntable and stuff, and shopping stylus and stuff like that. But
yeah,
because I kind of, you know, this would be pretty neat to be able to sit back in the studio and actually listen to music while not working. Enjoy it that way as well.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was at with the calibration. Like I have the room so that it sounds good when I'm sitting here talking on a microphone. And I did a recording test and I kind of liked the way it sounded. But in terms of these speakers, which I really have not spent a lot of time listening to in the last few years, I'm just not used to listening to music on them. And they just sound different than what I'm used to hearing in my,
yeah,
you know, my trusty headphones that I've, you know, mixed and mastered in a ton of music on. And so I just was listening to music, just music that I know and love, through the speakers, and just kind of like trying to not pay too much attention to where the buildup is and where the,
yeah,
where they sounded different. Like the tweeters are very, very high and crisp, and there's definitely some like 200, you know, hertz buildup somewhere.
Yeah.
I mean, and it was distracting. It wasn't enjoyable, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, that's like a caveat of having a mastering studio, is that it's not really set up to be an audiophile listening environment per se. And because it's set up to be a critical listening, expose all the problems type of listening environment, as opposed to coloring and making things sound better.
That's a really interesting point. The difference between critical listening and listening for enjoyment, and how, you know, the whole point of a setup like this is to listen for flaws and to correct them,
yeah,
so that it sounds good when it leaves here.
Right.
Instead of like kicking back going, oh, I spent all this time and money making this room sound great so that the music sounds not like something you would sit and listen to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's a funny way to think of it.
When you learn your speakers and your environment that they're playing in, and, you know, and it's set up for the way that we're describing it here to critically listen and to be able to expose those flaws in the recordings that you're listening to, it does the same thing to any other music you play through them,
yeah,
you know? And so, you know, they've got, you're setting up the most flat frequency response that you can possibly get for that purpose. And mm-hmm, that's not necessarily the best way to set up your room for, you know, for just listening to music. You know, I mean,
right,
I've grown up listening to music and hi-fi and stuff like that in rooms that had nothing in them but
couches,
furniture and people,
right,
you know?
Exactly. And it sounds great, right?
And it sounded great.
Yeah.
And in speakers that were made to reproduce music in that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Full range and however they're engineered for whatever. And, but yeah, it sort of ruins that for you in a way. So
yeah, that's really funny. I'd never really quite thought of it like that, but that's, yeah, that's spot on.
Yeah. So I'm actually, I've got another area. It's around the bend in my studio here that I'm setting up as like the hi-fi area. So I have a different listening area over there, which is actually going to be useful because I want to take stuff that I work on here in this area of the, you know, the production part of the studio,
mm-hmm,
and be able to take it over there and sit back and listen to it on that hi-fi.
Yeah. I like that idea.
That'll be another source for, I used to do that. I haven't had my hi-fi set up for about a year now, and I've been kind of missing it. So I'm going to get that set back up again.
I like that. Sounds like you have more space than I thought you did.
Oh, well, I measured it a while back, 650 square feet.
Oh, crap.
So my studio is in about 350 of that.
Okay.
And then I've got sort of a, and I got a couch and love seat down in the other end of this room here. And a table, and it's just been kind of a hangout place originally it was, that's where the rest of the band sat, where mm-hmm. while people are recording in here kind of thing, you know, but
yeah, that's cool. Anymore. Wow. That's nice. So tell me again about this table. You said it's where amplifiers are going to go.
Yeah. It's just a simple like media table. It's just that they're so hard to shop, and the prices like on the same table, like vary in the hundreds of dollars, you know? And so trying to shop and get the best price and basically not get screwed on it.
Wait, are we talking about guitar amplifiers?
No, I'm talking about amplifier for power and speakers.
Oh, now that makes way more sense. Because I'm trying to picture, why would you be stacking guitar amplifiers on top of a table?
Oh, no, this is
putting them on the floor against the wall like everybody else does.
Okay, no, this is going to be for the components of the...
terminology
loudspeakers, yeah.
Yeah, okay, never mind. That makes sense.
The whole point of this is to move to more of a far field type of speaker configuration.
Yeah.
And then have the combination where I can switch back and forth between my near fields and the floor standing speakers that are going to be behind them. Give myself basically more speakers to listen to and do comparisons between. So
I like that. Okay. Problem solved.
But yeah, and then the speakers I'm looking at are actually they'll reproduce like 17 hertz. Oh,
wow!
I know.
I've checked. I can't hear 17 hertz.
Well, the interesting thing is you can feel it.
Yeah, yeah.
And then and that combined with your metering tools, you can see it.
Sure.
And you know, so when you're getting, you know, I can hear 20 hertz. Below that is questionable. I'm not really sure how low I can hear, but I can sense stuff down in the 16 and 17 hertz range, and that's probably, I'm feeling it. But in order to do that, you really have to be able to reproduce it out of your speakers.
Well, maybe that's it. Maybe it's not that I can't hear it. Maybe it's that my speakers or my headphones can't reproduce things that low.
Yeah, that's the thing. And so geared maybe more towards mixing.
Yes.
That may not be as important. Well, you know, you certainly want to be aware of it.
I can see it on the meter. I mean, I deal with it. But I
yeah.
Just, yeah.
I've been...
Can you hear that?
Yeah.
You've had these rascal blue jays have been hanging around. Okay. Just,
are they like the fake jays, I think?
They're the scrub jays. We have these California scrub jays, and they're just rascals. This one it comes around, and I don't know where he gets them. He has peanuts, like whole peanuts. And he comes in the yard and he like sees me and like freezes. He's like, oh crap, he sees me. And he's hiding the peanuts around the yard in like planter boxes and under things. And it's like, he's stashing them away for some like winter or something. I don't know. But now he's got a friend that came by yesterday, and that I was sitting out in back, just sitting in the backyard, and these two jays came around and they were just like hanging out and yelling at each other like they are now. I'm not going to be able to cut that out, but remember how I was saying that it's
okay.
That,
they can be on the podcast.
Remember how I was saying that of the four different things I'm treating this room for, the hardest and most expensive is keeping sound out. This is the evidence there of all of the things I did is not keeping the blue jay sitting on the roof from coming through the wall. Or whatever. It's fine. It's nature. What are you going to do?
Yeah. We can just sit here and be quiet and listen to them.
They're funny. They're just these rascal blue jays that just hang out and yell at each other and hide peanuts in the planter boxes. You got a lot of wildlife around here for a city-ish suburb.
It's Yeah, but hey, you know, that was kind of interesting. I think it's important to note that, you know, you commented that maybe you're not reproducing that those lower frequencies with the system that you have. And I think it's important for people to know, because it's, and certainly at this point you've learned that, you know, that if you try to add more bass because you think you need it, because, yep, and then you go out and listen to it and you realize how much overdone, that's, we've talked about that before, but that's the perfect example of that type of problem in a, in, you know, mixing studio, for sure, for home studios especially, because reproducing bass equates to way more expensive monitors.
Sure.
And it really does. I mean, the lower you go, the more you pay for it. And we'll learn that, certainly. And even if you've got a great set of monitors that goes down to 30, you know, when you get into a mastering context, it's not enough. Mm. And because the problems that you need to deal with in the final stages, you know, when you're doing the mastering, it need to involve sub-bass, sub-harmonic frequencies and need to be able to detect those.
Yeah.
If you're relying solely on metering for that, it's difficult, you know, and I really don't always want to high pass everything.
Yeah.
You know, there's so much energy that is at play there. It really dramatically affects the whole song, depending on what you do on the low end.
True. Yeah. The whole thing about the low end, well, there's two things. One is that if you add more because you think you're not hearing it, and it's just that your speakers or your headphones aren't reproducing it, and then you take it somewhere that can reproduce it, like your car with your high-end stereo, or even your 5.1 stereo with a subwoofer, and then you realize how much you overdid it. That's one thing. The other thing is, as I think you're implying, when you go to master it or whatever, the low end, the extra low end, starts really affecting the compressor that you might have on your two bus.
True.
And basically kind of like sucking the life out of the rest of your mix or your master, because it's so overpowering the dynamics.
Yeah. Well, I've seen like a 10 dB cut in sub frequencies, you know, in the neighborhood of like 30 mm-hmm. hertz or so, affect the overall volume of the track by like 5 dB.
Yeah.
You know, that's on average.
Yeah.
What that really, it does so much, you know, and it changes so much else above it that it's really interesting, you know, and just the way that the energy is spread across all of the frequency bands across the entire song, you know, and it also, you know, genre dependent, but
sure.
It's just kind of fascinating if you get if you can spend time messing with 80 hertz and, you know, and 60 and 30. And if you got a song that's got a lot of bass in it already, and just see how that affects everything else, you know, up in the mids and high mids, especially, it's where I notice it the most.
Yeah.
And, you know, cause you can be messing with in the, 30 to 60 hertz range, and you're hearing a difference in how that impacts the snare drum
mm-hmm.
And the things that you do there. And oftentimes, you know, if you're making big cuts in the low end, I hear it affecting stuff like that in the 7 to 1,000 hertz range, pulling in energy out of like the snare and things like that. And so I've just grown away from the high passing. I guess where that leads me here is that I've become a really big fan of dynamic EQs. And
I love that.
And the precision that they give me to kind of surgically control specific frequencies that I want to work with, rather than big sweeping cuts of bands, you know what I mean?
Yeah. The Waves makes a nice six band one. What is it? RE6? I see people using it. I haven't purchased it because I really like the Nova, which is a 4 band EQ.
That's my favorite.
Free. And if you need more bands, you can just slap another one on there in sequence. But yeah, big fan of that. So it's like we talked about it before. It's kind of like a cross between EQ and a compressor, where there's a threshold where it doesn't start EQing until it gets past the threshold. And then, yeah, I love that for dipping out mud, for taming cymbals, for taming aggressive low end. It's a great tool to have in your toolbox.
Yeah. Yeah. Even if you're only, you know, I use like a lot of times I literally have one frequency selected like in TDR and with like a really narrow Q and throwing some compression on it so that it's working dynamically. It's not always working. It's only working when I need it to work. You know what right. I mean? Which is the beauty of it, because I don't want it to be working 100% of the time. I only want it working when I hit the threshold, you know, in that band. And, yep. Which is why the, the combination of the EQ and compressor on that is so nice.
Yeah. It's pretty transparent too, I think.
I also experiment with it all over the place in the chain. I, you know, like at the very beginning or...
Oh, yeah.
I usually, I do multi-stage compression. I'll throw it in between compressors and stuff like that. I've even put it at the very end, you know, end of the chain before the last limiter. It just kind of depends on the song. And I play around with that to see what kind of different effects it has before and after.
Yeah, that's fun to do. I'm always kind of surprised. Like sometimes just, I don't know, you kind of run out of ideas once in a while and you're just kind of like, well, what if I put this before that? And what if I put this before that?
Yeah.
And it's really kind of surprising how in some situations, just the order of the same exact plugins without changing any settings, just the order of the plugins can just make a dramatic difference.
I was mastering a song the other night and I got a revision and I threw the revision in my session and I forgot to mute the original.
Oh.
And I was like, why is this? The whole thing was like, it's like 3 dB louder, you know, when the revision was just to do something to one instrument, you know, yeah. And I couldn't figure it out. I was like, man, this sounds really good.
You basically, you know, parallel compressed it without knowing it.
And so I A-B'd it. And so it was two of the same tracks with one of them had an alteration in just like one instrument, you know, it didn't affect the whole thing. And both of those tracks playing, you know, so they were exactly the same track.
Yep.
No phase problems that I detected or anything like that. And I was like, man, I wonder if that's like a new secret sauce thing, you know, went through. Because it was really actually, I was impressed with it. I didn't end up using it. I took it out and then it was kind of sad for a while because I kind
of started. This doesn't sound as good, but the client likes it. So, I guess.
But yeah, so yeah, basically worked that one back up from the ground, you know, because I actually had all kinds of changes I made, you know, and it's like,
yeah,
I got this, you know, I was like really happy with it. And so, oh, I don't think I really shouldn't render this with those two tracks live. Who knows what kind of unforeseen problems that would cause. But
yeah.
I really didn't see any phase issues. I think that I should have expected to see some phase problems with that.
Only, yeah, I don't know. I mean, only if you did something different before you bounced it, I would imagine. Otherwise, if it lines up time-wise,
yeah,
it should be the exact same waveform.
Yeah, I guess it was. You know, it just made it louder.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think the whole signal hitting the master bus was louder and
that's it, yeah.
And it was just driving the effects in the master bus a little harder on the inputs, you know.
Yeah.
But
well, keep that in mind for next time, I guess.
Well, I did, you know. And what I did is I ended up bumping up the one track on the you know, on its own track fader volume.
Yeah.
And I just pushed that track harder and ended up getting the same result out of it. But it was kind of interesting.
Cool. Well,
but anyway,
for not having a topic, I think we got we got some mileage out of just chit chatting, which is nice. I kind of thought we were going to save the topicless topics for season two, but maybe this is a warm up.
Season two will be the topless topics.
Oh, hey. Yeah. Nobody wants to see that.
When we're going to video podcasts, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh dear.
Well, that's it. We don't have anything else, man.
No, I gotta go get these enchiladas in the oven. It's podcast enchiladas night.
Right on. Okay, everybody, thanks.
Yeah, thanks so much for tuning in. Thanks for sticking with us.
We're out of here.
Have a great week, everybody.
All right, cheers. Take care. Thanks. Be well.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, that's it for another episode of the Indie Music Podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. If you did, leave us a comment or a review and share with your friends. Hit us up on our website at indiemusiccast.com. Find myself on Twitter at Mojo's Army. Find Douglas on Twitter at Rezo Studio. Thanks. Until next time, keep creating.